This is the Midweek Horror Podcast with Hannah Fox and Ellis Reed.
Welcome to the Midweek Horror Podcast. I'm Hannah Fox.
And I'm Ellis Reed.
Oh, it's so nice to be back.
It is amazing to be back. And we are going to have to do these more regularly, Hannah.
Certainly. Yep, we're going to have to up our game. I mean, we've said it before. We'll probably say it again. I think we've got to a point now
where we say it every time we do a podcast.
Pretty much, yeah.
We're back.
Yeah. Hey, guys, have you missed us?
No. Yeah, yeah. I don't think we've got any listeners left.
No, but who would blame them?
Yeah, yeah.
Someone left in Mumbai or we had a few. Was it Mumbai?
We did. We had a lot of listeners in, India.
Yeah.
Several cities. It was very well represented in our demographic.
I hope you're hanging on in there, guys.
Yeah, yeah. So tonight's main entertainment is a film I'm very excited about.
Yeah, and I have seen it and found it very, kind of adverts for it and thought it looked very intriguing and quite creepy.
Just the poster for it looked terrifying. It is The Smile.
Yeah.
I've had this on my list to watch for ages. And actually, I think my friend Neil saw it and said it was amazing.
Yeah, I've heard good things.
And the last we heard from Neil in the context of this podcast, I think, was when he recommended we watch Malignant, which we loved.
We did love that.
And a lot of people didn't like it at all.
Oh, no, I thought it was great.
Yeah, yeah. No, I thought it was outstanding.
Mm.
So hopefully The Smile will be another Stone Cold banger.
Yeah. Come on, Neil. Give us another good one.
Oh, sorry, I coughed over your laugh there. So we'll have to edit the laugh out.
I know. Do we edit the laugh or the cough? I mean,
we did them both at the same time. That's the problem. We either have both or neither. But if we don't have the laugh in, it'll sound like you've been quite aggressive towards Neil. So maybe I'll just not edit this bit.
Better be good, Neil.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay, I'll leave the laugh and the cough in.
Great.
So shall we watch the trailer?
Yeah.
For The Smile.
Smile, yeah.
See you after the jingle, guys. That looked terrifying.
That looked creepy as hell.
Oh, my word. It's, well, where to begin? Well, probably at the start of the trailer.
Well, yeah.
Woman who works in mental health.
Yep.
Is speaking to a patient who's very scared. She says she sees something no one else can see that's smiling at her. Then she panics, presumably because she can see it in the room. The main character goes to phone for help, and when she turns round from the phone, the patient is just standing there smiling at her with a piece of broken glass. Implication that she kills herself.
Yeah. And then from there, obviously the mental health nurse or psychiatrist, or she works in mental health. Yeah, we're not quite sure at the moment. But she...
I think she's a doctor, probably.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But so she is then kind of obviously a bit freaked out and starts to sort of see worrying other things in other patients.
Like people smiling.
And the fact that actually there might be more to this than just this one patient. So she's talking to people about it, trying to explain what this is. And as we go through the trailer, it seems to indicate that she's kind of building a picture with someone else, that there has been a series of deaths connected somehow.
So it reminded me of Ring.
Ring, that's what I thought.
In that, I think there is a time-bound curse that gets passed on.
Seven days.
Yeah, yeah. So I think somebody smiles at you before they die, and then you go around seeing all these scary smiling things, and then in a maximum of a week, then you die. Something comes and kills you.
And then somebody
who sees you before you die and sees a smile. I think that's it. You see a smile and then the countdown starts.
The countdown's triggered like it was in Ring when you watch the film.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it seems to sort of indicate that she's investigating this and trying to work out a pattern and comes across a guy who maybe skipped it somehow. So survived the curse.
And she wants to know how everyone died except for him.
Yeah. Which is quite intriguing.
Yeah, I want to know how everyone died apart from him.
It certainly made me kind of really want to watch the film because I was like, I really want to know what's happening. Like, what is this? How did it happen? How did this guy manage to not die? So, yeah, really good trailer. Really hooked you in, I thought.
Yeah. I wonder if it showed some of the scary, well, I sort of hope it showed some of the scariest moments in the trailer, because there were some really scary bits in that trailer.
Yeah.
And we've got a whole film of it to watch. So, yeah. Wow.
So I think it's going to be, I'm putting it out there, I think it might be a 5.
I think it might be a Stone Cold 5. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we've made our prediction. All we can do now is watch the film together and then report back on whether it was indeed a 5-star horror experience.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Try not to smile because it's creepy.
Well, Hannah, what did you think of that?
Wow, I actually really enjoyed it.
I thought that was superb.
Yeah, it was really good. I was, I was kind of what I expected, actually. I thought it was a solid film. Really interesting plot.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, the plot seems to be, it was a little bit like Ring.
It was a bit like Ring.
It was also a little bit like It Follows as well, if you've seen.
No, I don't think so.
Well worth a watch.
Yeah.
So the basic premise is somebody who has been possessed previously. So this supernatural being spreads by trauma. So what it does is once it's cursed you, after about a week, it will possess you and make you walk up to somebody and smile in a really creepy way and then kill yourself in a very brutal, shocking manner.
Yeah.
Some of the suicides were bloody horrible.
They're gross, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get onto that in a bit. And then once you've seen that, the sight of the trauma means the demonic being or the spirit or whatever can possess you. So you have a week where, based on the protagonist's experience, you just have a shocker. Like supernatural stuff happening around you, jump scares, scary stuff. You're seeing weird smiling people that no one else can see. It like screws with your life a bit. So like there's one scene where the main character has bought her nephew an electric train, which she's wrapped up for him. And coincidentally, she loses a cat around the same time. And then on the birthday itself, there's this horrible sort of social awkwardness scene. Reminding me of a scene in Exorcist where they're having a dinner party. Mm. And the daughter comes down and just pisses herself in front of everyone. Like, yeah. In a way, those socially awkward scenes are scarier than the demon.
Yes.
But basically, the nephew opens the present and it's the dead cat. And she's like, no, no, you've got to believe me. It wasn't me, it wasn't me. And everyone's like, what is wrong with me? So obviously, enough things happen. She's having enough supernatural experiences and stuff like that going on around her that all her friends and family think she's going insane. She discovers by investigating the past chain, her ex, who's a police officer, helps her look at past cases. Then they find this chain of about 20 people where each person who killed themselves in a gruesome way witnessed somebody kill themselves in a gruesome way a week previously. The only person who didn't get caught by the curse was somebody who discovered that if you kill someone, the curse skips you and goes to whoever witnessed you murdering someone. So basically, that's the curse.
Yeah.
Unless within a week you kill someone in a brutal way and there's a witness who gets traumatized, the spirit quickly possesses you and makes you traumatize someone by killing yourself. So it's a pretty terrifying concept.
Yeah. And obviously our protagonist, Rose.
Yeah.
She catches the curse from seeing one of her patients, because she's a doctor at a psychiatric hospital, and she sees one of her patients basically kill herself and go through this process. So the patient is in the room with her behaving normally when suddenly she flips out and she slashes her throat whilst also doing this really, really sort of demonic smile.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what kicks this sort of the chain of events for her off anyway. And sort of through the rest of the film, we are watching her kind of slowly look like to everyone else like she's having a breakdown, like a serious breakdown, but she's also trying to investigate how she can get out of it, hence why she goes to the jail and finds the guy who did manage to kind of break the curse by killing someone, which wasn't great either, really.
Yeah. And yeah, well, as far as we can tell, that is the only option.
Yeah.
Because one way or the other, and it take, you know, it can happen in as soon as 4 days or as many as a week. One way or the other, you are going to seriously traumatise someone who will then have the curse passed to them. And if you don't do it by murdering somebody in a brutal way with a witness, then the spirit will possess you and make you kill yourself in a brutal way. In front
it
of
just sort of takes you over. Completely.
So that's her only option. She can murder somebody, or, well, she thinks she's come up with another option, a plan C. Because she doesn't want to murder anyone. Obviously, she doesn't want to kill herself. So
she ends up, it's sort of in a bit of a kind of, sort of like as we're getting towards the end of the film, she thinks about, well, actually, if I don't have a witness, can I break the curse that way? So she ends up driving out into the sort of, this sort of cabin in the wilderness where she sort of grew up, where no one's really around. I mean, really, the cabin should be knocked down. It's kind of just like an old sort of broken down shed at this point. And she goes there to sort of face the demon, but, you know, just to kind of try and jump the curse by facing the demon, but by having no witness, she won't pass it on.
She has a sort of mini revelation where her friend, who's the senior at the hospital, says to her, I don't think you should be alone. And she suddenly looks at him and goes, I should be alone.
Yeah.
Because if there's nobody else around to traumatise, it's kind of like stale.
Yeah.
You know, the demon can't do what it wants to do.
Yeah. But unfortunately for her, as she's having this showdown with the demon, her ex, Joel, the police officer, turns up.
Yeah.
And so, unfortunately, there's a witness suddenly again. After thinking she has at one point defeated the demon by... So the demon at this point comes to her in the form of her mother, who committed suicide when she was a girl, which is also quite a dark moment where we get to know a bit more about her character.
Very much. So we've gathered by this point already that when she was a little girl, she found her mum who committed suicide. What we didn't realise and we see at the end is actually she discovered her mum ill, having taken an overdose, and mum was like, I've made a mistake, call for help. And she just sort of shakes her head and she shouts, Rose, and she screams, runs off. And it turns out that basically she's been carrying this guilt all her life. She's so scared.
Because she left her to die.
Yeah, she basically left her to die rather than calling for help. Pretty dark stuff.
Yeah. So at the end, so at the end, she's facing the demon in the form of her mother. And I think she sort of thinks that she's kind of defeated it.
Yeah.
She sets her on fire and then sort of feels like, you know, she's won the battle. And then we sort of a cut to a new scene where she's going to, driving away from the cabin, and then she goes to the apartment of her ex-lover. And she's sort of pouring her heart out to him and saying, you know, will you stay with me while I sleep? And then in a really sinister moment, he suddenly goes, I'll stay with you forever. And we see the smile, come back on his face. And at that point, we realise that actually she hasn't broken the curse. She's still at the cabin. And then when the real Joel does show up and is witness to her and the demon again, of course, the demon then is able to manipulate her. And she sets herself on fire.
Yeah. Quite a surprising scene, actually. Yeah. The demon pulls its face off to reveal loads of teeth in the mouth. Yeah. And then actually crawls into Rose's mouth. And then it cuts away to Joel kicking the door down. And obviously the demon has now possessed Rose. And she smiles at him and sets herself on fire. And then you see the reflection of her self-immolating in his eye and see his traumatised face. And you realise now he's got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sort of has the ring of terrible truth when you're watching it, in a way that plot summary sounds a bit weird and hokey.
Yeah.
But actually, it's presented in a really compelling way, like all the best horror.
Yeah. It's a really tight plot, I thought. It was a good amount of time. You're never left, like, bored. It's sort of always moving the plot along.
And absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, really creepy.
Like, I've said to you a few times when we're doing these podcasts, oh, we've seen so many horror films now. I miss the days when I hadn't seen as many and got really scared watching them. There were multiple points in that where the camera just hovered for ages and you knew something scary
was coming. On dark space.
Yeah, I was like, you know, you do that thing where you sort of close your eyes almost all the way so all you see is a blur of colour.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, that's safe. And like, I don't even know, when you're at that point, why not just completely close your eyes?
I don't know, but it's just what we do, isn't it? Because you feel like you've got to watch a bit of it. Yeah. You've got to watch it safely. I always do that.
Yeah, look through your fingers, literally. It's yeah.
And I did that. I did that when she. There's one point where she's like alone and she's looking into sort of like a dark room, and then waiting for something to run out at her. And I did that then because that was really creepy. They really did that well. The sort of anticipation, what's going to happen next, the suspense. Yeah, that's really good. Really well done.
Really stylish direction, I thought.
Yeah.
It sort of felt cut above your bog standard horror film. Great score as well. Just weird, eerie, sort of jingly jangly atmospherics. Like no real music to speak. But I thought that was random. So at the end of the film. Yeah, when it stopped, they just started playing that old pop song about a lollipop.
My boy lollipop.
I don't know.
I can't quite remember, but it's something about a lollipop.
yeah, lollipop.
Lollipop. Lollipop.
And that was the sort of song you'd expect at the end of a film like Happy Death Day.
Yeah.
You know, a sort of like slightly tongue-in-cheek, silly slasher or something. Complete tonal shift for the credits.
Yeah, weird. But fine.
And also, I could understand if the curse had been a lollipop. You know, like if they'd like found a cheesy old pop song about how you always make me smile or something. Something at least thematically related.
Yeah. I also noticed, I don't know if you found this, it was shot very dark. Like all of it was shot quite dark.
Yeah.
Which I think made it feel really creepy. At some points it was almost like sort of almost a black and white. It was so dark.
Yeah.
In certain bits. And most of it was shot pretty dark. And I think that did make you feel the sort of the eeriness more as well.
I think I can honestly say it's the most scared I've been of a film with this podcast.
It's up there. I feel like there was another one that freaked me out.
That might actually be the scariest of the films. I saw Ring.
Ring, yeah. Ring's back in the day. Bad.
Ring was worse, to be fair.
Yeah, Ring was worse.
That screwed me
The
right
Japanese
up.
Jumping characters used to freak me. Oh, did you watch the American?
No, the Japanese one.
Yeah. Do you remember that the characters used to jump around on the video?
I think I blacked that
out. Oh, that really freaked me out. Oh, yeah. Ring is totally scary. But that was really eerie and really creepy. And up there. You know, very, very good. Acting was good.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, I think acting, plot.
I thought Trevor had an easy part to play.
Oh, yeah. He could have been anyone.
So Trevor, her current boyfriend. I think they actually did a really good job with Rose's character. But it was quite sad, actually, quite pitiful at the beginning. Mm. Because when all this stuff starts, he comes home and he's like, how was your day? And she goes, oh, terrible. So one of my patients killed himself and does this out. Anyway, it doesn't matter, I'm just venting. I'm fine, how are you? And he's sort of like, okay, good.
Yeah, he doesn't want anything to be in any way dramatic or emotional.
To the point where I said to you multiple times in the film, this guy just doesn't give a shit.
No, worst boyfriend ever.
Worst boyfriend ever. Like, he just looks unimpressed whenever she said anything other than fine.
But it was interesting because they followed that through. Because we sort of learnt at the end when she sort of confesses to Joel that she actually broke up with him because she had put walls up to keep people out emotionally and she felt him pulling them down. Yeah. And clearly she was with Trevor because Trevor didn't pull any of those walls down.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Trevor was very almost materialistic, surface level guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Who just wanted a surface level relationship. No deeper, meaningful, emotional, difficult stuff. So that all made sense as well. She had this weird relationship with Trevor that I think at the start we didn't really understand. So we were like, this is weird. This is terrible, but that boyfriend.
I think the characters were definitely more interesting than I was expecting. Because right at the beginning I thought, oh, we're going to have some very broadly drawn characters here. Because there's a very early scene where she gets summoned to see like the head doctor. And he's like, did you check this woman in? And she's like, yeah, she needs treatment. And he says, she doesn't have any insurance. I've got the board breathing down my neck. And she's like, maybe the board should start giving a shit about people. And I'm like, oh, here we go. You know, this is going to be some very, very sort of archetypical cliched characters. And he's saying to her, have you been here since the late shift last night? And it's like, okay, she's working really hard because she helps people. She doesn't care if they don't have insurance. I thought, these are not going to be very interesting characters. We've seen this all 100 times. But it actually, after that point, it sort of impressed me more. Oh, and the first time we meet a sister who's like a sort of stereotypical
self-involved,
materialistic, and her partner, and I was like, okay, they're very broad as well.
Yeah,
but no, apart from those little bits, the characterization.
Yeah, agree. I think it was good. Not too many characters.
No, kept it small and manageable.
Well, definitely the main characters, which, you know, I always think helps. Because otherwise you think, all right, who's that and what are they doing? Yeah, overall, though, just a really good, solid, scary horror film.
Yeah, yeah. I think, so here's something I wanted to ask you. So throughout the film, the entity, when it's sort of like, it just harasses you between you getting cursed and then the curse playing out to its bloody conclusion. It, like I say, it just mucks around with a bit. It turns up sometimes pretending to be people you know but doing the creepy smile.
Mm.
I found that very effective. And then right at the end, when she realises that the curse needs witnesses to move on to the next house, she thinks, I should be alone, and she goes off to this abandoned house. The spirit actually manifests in its truest form to basically confront her. And its truest form is what I can only really describe as sort of very tall version of Marilyn Manson.
Is that its truest form, though, or is that because it was still a bit of the mother and it just stretched?
Oh, maybe. I felt that all went a bit, started to feel more like a film from the Conjuring franchise.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it sort of went a bit more sort of traditional Hollywood horror film. Well, here we go, here's the big CGI monster.
Yes, a little bit. I think its truer form maybe was when it took its skin off.
Oh yeah, the weird mouth. So yes, that's probably its truest form. But I guess by that point it was...
If it's anything, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that yeah.
I found it more effective when it was just a bit like the monster out of It Follows, just always pretending to be something else. I thought that was the scariest.
Oh yeah. I always think not really seeing it is way scarier than when they try and show it.
Yeah. And actually, a lot of horror films are never as scary at the end, because the end is dominated by the drama of the confrontation. Climax,
and here's the confrontation. Yeah. But I think it was fine in that it's obviously what your mind is displaying. So it didn't feel silly, because I think it was what it was, because she was thinking about her mum and then various weird versions of her mum. So it didn't seem too ridiculous to me.
It actually reminded me a little bit. Do you remember when we were watching It Chapter 2?
Yeah.
And the old woman turned into the scary old woman and sort of bounced out of the kitchen.
I'm never a big fan of those CGI monsters, if I'm honest. Yeah. Like I say, it never... it didn't take anything much away from it for me. But yeah, I agree. I think it's weird. I think it's more effective when it's subtle.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think for most of the film, it was subtle. And I was cacking my pants.
Yeah.
Not to put too fine a point on it. When I wasn't covering my eyes or half-closing, I was trying to rank the different actors' interpretation of a creepy smile. Because some actors were better at that than others.
Yeah.
The first person we see smiling while she kills herself, that was a very creepy
smile.
That
was really creepy, yeah.
The second one we see is a guy called, was it Carl? The patient.
Carl,
yeah. And his was a bit goofy, if I'm honest. His was a bit
goofy, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, goofy rather than creepy. And actually, in the very final scene, I thought Rose's creepy smile, which is obviously the end of the film, I don't think her creepy smile was one of the best ones in the film.
No, I actually thought she suddenly looked really good. I was like, oh, she looks lovely.
Like, suddenly it's a shampoo advert or something. Yeah, it's a nice smile.
Yeah, it's like, oh, she's a very attractive lady, which I hadn't noticed before, because she'd always look so miserable for the whole film.
Yeah, yeah.
Understandably, because she's having a shocker. But yeah, I was, oh yeah, she looks... I know what you mean. Some of them were creepier. One of the girls nailed it. The girl that was at the party, that was a creepy one as well. That really was like a proper creepy one.
Yeah.
So yeah, it that is true. Just, they can only do it... It's not really their fault. They can only do it the best they can. But your some face were freakier than others. Yeah.
Stars rating.
Stars, the most important thing. 5 for me.
Yeah, I would give it 5.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not the best film I've ever seen.
No.
But it was very good.
Best I've seen for a while, though. Yes. I really liked it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, another hit for Neil. If I might be misremembering, actually. I can't even remember if he recommended it.
Just take I'll
look back,
anyway,
I'll look back at our WhatsApps. Thank you. So, how? We have to guess what score this film has got on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay. Right. I think it's got quite a high score. I'm going to go with 88.
I'll go for 87.
Ooh, okay. Rotten Tomatoes.
It's my prediction. 87%.
Oh, we were in the right ballpark.
Yeah.
80. I think that's not unexpected, because I do think most people would think that was a solid, good film.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see what people say.
There's always some critics who don't like horror films.
Yeah.
Well, talking of critics, should we look at some of the splodges and see what people didn't like about it?
Okay. So, let me quickly read the splodge to check it makes sense. So, who's this by? Oh, okay. Christy Puckco from Mashable says, it could have been the kind of sinister flick that follows you home, slipping through the door, up the stairs, and curling up deep inside your head, daring you to sleep. Instead, Smile feels as disposable as a candy wrapper.
I think that's too much to expect of a film.
I know.
It's not your third date with someone.
I'm not really sure what she did want, to be honest there, but okay.
Follow you up the stairs and snuggle into bed with you.
Yeah, bang me senseless. James Luxford.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't expecting that. That made me cough.
Sorry.
That's all right.
So James Luxford from BBC.com says, if you want something that will make you jump out of your seat, this is very effective. But for me, the story just didn't come together.
What?
Again, what did you want?
That was a very, very... I mean, like, apart from the fact that it doesn't make any sense because the supernatural never does.
Well, yeah.
Like, it's got its own internal logic.
But I mean, I think you've got
Works. It completely works. It's watertight.
I don't think you could really argue about that, though. You kind of got to suspend reality a little
exactly,
bit.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, it's not a lot of splodges, to be fair. There's really not many. There's one. Oh, it's a really big one. Well, I think, to be honest, the fact that I'm struggling to find another splodge. Oh, okay, here's one.
Ooh,
Eric,
lots of splodges.
I know, me too. I just wanted to know what people were disappointed in. So random. Eric Child Dress.
Oh, I don't know why. What a terrible surname.
I think it's Childress. Sorry, everyone, about that. I think that was more reader error.
Let's have his name again.
Eric Childress from Movie Madness Podcast says, Sosie Bacon gives what a film purporting to take trauma seriously deserves. But when the only solution to ridding oneself of specific trauma is to kill yourself or someone else, just how seriously can we take it beyond its overload of jump scares? Well, I mean...
Ooh, that's actually something I hadn't even thought of. Like, if you take this as a film with a message, it's a very dubious message.
I don't know. What people need to remember, though, they're not killing themselves. The demon is killing them. It's murder or be murdered.
Yes, the demon possesses you and takes over your body.
You're not killing yourself. So I do think it's more murder or be murdered. I mean, it's not much of a better...
Yeah. Let's have a red tomato.
Okay, let's
hear
from
somebody who likes it.
Yeah. A.A. Dowd from Digital Trends says, turn up your nose if you must at the low, cheap sting of a jump scare. Smile gives that malign device a workout for the ages. It rattles with aplomb.
Rattles with aplomb.
Rattles with aplomb.
And by the way, I've got to say, like, all through the first part of this podcast, I was calling the film The Smile. And apparently it's just
the
Smile.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, so sorry, Phil. I've been getting your name wrong.
Oh, I thought you said Phil. I was like, it's Phil?
No.
Yeah, sorry, everyone. It is just Smile. I should not read anyone's name that's not like... if it's Bill Smith, I could manage. Otherwise,
have a go. Who's this?
Okay. Majani Rawls from Substream Magazine. With previous horror lore, people have taken down the likes of Freddy Krueger and Michael Myers. But what do you do when there's no talisman or special incantation to beat back the evil thing that's stalking you? I think what he's trying to say is it's maybe quite refreshing that actually you just get killed. And Austin Burke from Austin Burke Flick Fan Nation says, while they scattered throughout, Smile is more than just a jump-filled scare horror movie. It gets less impactful as it wraps up, but the journey is one worth taking.
I agree that it gets less impactful as it wraps up. Like I say, not enough to dock half a star.
No.
But I think that's fair.
And should we look at the audience? What do you think the audience scored it?
90.
77. But, you know, still...
Oh, sorry, I thought that was your guess.
Oh, no, sorry, because I'd seen it.
Oh, should we have a splodge from the audience?
Yeah, let's have a look. I love the audience ones more than the critics. Sam says, it was long and boring.
It was quite long for 1 hour.
I wouldn't say it was boring,
Sam. It was 1 hour 55 minutes,
I don't think I can... agree with you on
definitely
boring.
Definitely wasn't boring.
Joshua says, very low budget, Wad not amazed, and there was no ending.
What was that bit in the middle?
Wad not amazed.
I think he means was.
I think he means was,
amazed.
But yeah. Also, it wasn't low budget. That would have cost them quite a bit of money to make. This is infuriating from John. There was one shot in this entire movie worth seeing. Which one?
You
have to be more specific than that.
Yeah,
because we won't know which one you're on about, whether we can agree or not.
Do you have any theories as what it might be?
Maybe the bit in the psychiatrics off her office in the beginning when the first girl kills herself. Because that's the first time we ever see any of it.
Yeah,
and it's quite creepy.
It was very creepy.
Maybe that, but... And Krob says... Very predictable, storyline was horrible, and the monster at the end was ridiculous.
No, just incorrect. These are incorrect user reviews.
I mean, I feel like, you know, someone try and say something a bit... Okay, Jordan has said, the true evil parasitic entity is seeing this movie, then recommending it to another person, and so goes the cycle. Terribly executed.
Trying to be a bit clever there.
Oh, Jordan, I thought you were giving it more substance there, but I should have read ahead, as always.
Well,
there we go.
An excellent film. We recommend it. It's on Prime now.
And there's also, just to say, we seem to have concentrated quite heavily on splodges, but there weren't that many compared to the great reviews, both with the audience and the critics.
Yeah, we just enjoy reading the splodges.
Yeah, just because they're quite funny, really.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we can all predict what people will say in the positive sense.
Yeah, they'll say, I like this movie.
But who knows what the Johns and Jordans of this world and Krobs are going to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think another good film.
Yeah, great film. And a podcast complete.
Yeah.
So what other horrors have you witnessed since we last did a podcast?
I knew you were going to ask me that. And you know what? I'll have completely forgotten until, probably until after I've left here.
So
how about yourself?
I can think of one that we both saw separately.
Mm.
And that was the remake or the reimagining of Hellraiser.
Yes. That was. I watched that when I was ill, actually. That was, I liked it. What did you think?
I enjoyed it. Yeah. I think what it did for me that was really impressive. So Hellraiser is one of my favourite horror franchises. I've seen them all, and I think even the bad ones, and actually I think only a couple of them are really bad. All the rest, to a lesser or greater extent, I thought were great.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed them. All the straight-to-video sequels, I lap them up. I love Hellraiser. And what the remake did for me... that was really impressive. It kind of made the concept and the Cenobites scary again.
Mm.
The idea that by playing around with this puzzle box, you could summon demons who are interested in inflicting as much pain as they can on people. That is actually a terrifying idea. And I feel like this film made it terrifying again. You know, that sense of terrible inevitability when somebody's played with the box and they've been summoned. And you know, there's no way they can escape. So that was really good. And I did enjoy it. There were a couple of changes to the mythology I wasn't mad keen on. So something that for me is really a key about the Hellraiser mythology. So there's a brilliant bit in Hellraiser 2, I think, where the evil doctor, who he's interested in learning about the power that he can get from the demons from the other world, but obviously he doesn't want to call them on himself. because he's working at a mental hospital, he basically finds a sort of young girl. I think she's mute, but she's a savant. So she's completely naive and innocent, but she's amazing at solving puzzles. So he gives her the puzzle box to solve. So rather than him solving it himself. Mm. And when she does solve it and the demons turn up to claim her, like the Cenobites are about to go forward and grab her, and Pinhead says to them, "No, no, it is not hands that summon us. It is desire." And it's like, we're not touching her because she didn't know what she was doing. And I think there's this idea in the mythology that although people are just playing with the box, the reason the box ends up in their hands and they end up curious about it is because of something in their character that's calling out to the box and calling out to the demons, some sort of curiosity or thirst or hunger. Now, in the new film, when you solve the box, a little knife pops out of it. And if it cuts you, it's that cut that marks you to be claimed by the demons. So first of all, you can solve the box, and if you're lucky in how you're holding it and it pops out and doesn't catch you, you're fine. And also, once it's popped out, if it hasn't caught you, you can literally go up to somebody else and stab them with it or cut them with it. And then the demons will come and get them.
Yeah.
And at one point, it's a bit like, you know, it's almost getting a bit farcical with them running around trying to stab each other.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so now this is completely abstract. It used to be this idea that the box was just incidental. The box would find you if you were the right sort of person that these demons wanted. But now it is literally, you can go up to a complete random who's never showed any interest in the box. If you've made the box pop the little knife out and you've missed it, you know, you could be opening it with chainmail gloves on. And then you could go up to anyone and nick them with it, and then the demons will pull them apart.
That's what happened to, the main character, the girl, who was sort of, I would say was the main character throughout that film, to her brother, because he just accidentally touched it, didn't he?
Yeah, after she'd solved it. But just by fluke, maybe not even fluke, but the way she'd been holding it, the knife had popped out without cutting her.
Yeah.
So that, to me, is a bit less interesting and a bit more sort of almost like transactional and procedural. Like, you can imagine the Cenobites like, "Sorry, mate, it says here on my list.
It's you.
But, what? Somebody just ran up to me and bopped me with it. Yeah, but you do have the cut on you, and that means it's you. You got me. Yeah, it's almost quite bureaucratic.
Yeah.
Whereas there was something a little more sort of Faustian and interesting about it, I think, when there was this idea that, yeah, like, they use the box, and the box almost has a mind of its own in terms of where it ends up and who it tempts. But really, it's your desire that calls them.
Well, because what I did like was the fact that the kind of probably the main villain of the film had ended up, because of his like obsession with the box and his want for it, he'd ended up with that big like machine inside of him.
Yeah, yeah.
That was really creepy, and I kept thinking,
just existed to cause him pain.
Yeah, like, literally just
tugging his nerves.
Yeah, every now and then, didn't it like twist and just pull all of his nerves?
And what it looked like,
that was really effective.
To me, it looked a little comical. Like, I'd question the design because it literally
was, like, through his body. Yeah.
Yeah. So to me, it would have been a bit more Hellraiser-esque if it had maybe been like some brace that was on him, like something that was molded to his form.
Mm-hmm.
But what it looked like is if somebody had got an accordion or a typewriter or something, you know, something a bit quaint and antique, loaded it into a cannon and just blasted it into his torso. So it was literally just embedded in his torso at a weird angle, this sort of bizarre machine. But yeah, it was a cool idea. I just would have designed it slightly differently.
Yeah, no, I take your point. But I think it was the fact that that was, to me, more what it was about, the obsession and the greed, and that's how you end up being involved in this stuff with these people. And that character to me made a lot more sense.
That character, the bad guy, was classic Hellraiser. Because that was all about, you know, somebody who's really decadent and amoral, who has exhausted all the pleasures their riches can afford them, and ends up becoming interested in the Hellraiser mythology and the Cenobites because they see it as a gateway to pleasures as yet unimagined.
Yeah.
And then when they actually get it, it's not what they wanted because it's a nightmare.
like the guy in Hellraiser, the first one, who's like always chasing like these sexual pleasures and stuff going around the world, and that's how he ends up with him. He's a bastard as well, you know. Like, And I liked that side of it more than I did these kids running around throwing a box at each other.
Yeah, try to stab each other.
Oh, crap, I stepped on it. That
sort of thing. I would go as far as saying that the knife popping out and cutting you, I just, as an innovation in the Hellraiser franchise, I didn't like. Because what had happened in the original franchise is you'd be playing with this sort of like really cool looking, almost like Rubik's Cube. And when you solved it, it would just start glowing magically and you'd be gazing at it in enchantment, like, oh my God, why is it glowing? And you wouldn't realize it's because you've put something terrible in motion. You've summoned the Cenobites, the demons who are going to torture you. And that just seemed a bit more magical and fantastical than, like, ah, shit, I've been caught. But the way the demons appeared was amazing. Like, it was just
well done.
The dread you felt when you knew that's it, they've been summoned, they're coming. I thought that was the best thing about it.
And they always sort of put them a little bit in the distance, so you're sort of aware they're there and they're coming for you.
And that's
quite creepy as well.
Very much so, yeah.
So overall, I thought it wasn't a bad film.
No, not at all.
And,
not at all.
You know, a perfectly good, like, addition to the series. Well, thanks for joining us, everyone. Tune in next time for more
Midweek Horror.
Don't get scared now.